The time is 3 o'clock, almost, Tuesday, April 29th, 1986. Well, I'll get it yet. The place is the audio studio in the MSU Livingston Lord Library. The Oral History Agreement form, giving ownership of this tape to the Northwest Minnesota Historical Center, has been signed by the interviewee and interviewer. Now, to complete this introductory part of this record, Howard, I will ask you to give me your full name, your address, your position, and what you are doing right now.
Okay, my name is Howard Manfred Werglund, and I live at 2115 5th Street South, Moorhead. Currently, I'm the principal at the Moorhead Middle School North Campus.
Okay. Will you tell us a little bit about your family, Howard?
Okay, I'm married, and we have a son, Mark, who is an elementary principal in East Grand Forks. They have three sons. My wife teaches in Fargo, North Dakota. I'm very proud to say that last Tuesday night she was awarded a certificate and a plaque of excellence in the Fargo system.
Wow.
So it's kind of buzzing in our family.
You bet. And you just had the one son?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Howard, where were you born?
I was born in Binford, North Dakota.
Mm-hmm. And where did your parents come from?
My mother came from Kapunger, Norway, and my father from Bergen, Norway, and they met in this country.
Well, they came here as young people then, or were
yes,
they quite young?
They came as single people. They were of adult age and met at Pekin, North Dakota.
It's amazing. Why did your mother come here, I wonder, to this part of the country?
Well, she had some friends living in this area. And she was anxious to come over to America. There was a great migration underway.
Right.
And this was just prior to 1920, during that period.
Uh-huh. And so you were born and raised then in North Dakota?
That's right.
Uh-huh. And your educational background then, you went to a country school or did you go
no,
to a town school? Or?
To a town school. And then I went to Valley City State College after serving in World War II in the Navy. I did go to school in the Navy, and it picked up 16 quarter hours in that manner.
Mm-hmm.
After Valley City, I attended University of North Dakota and obtained my master's degree there. Since that time, I've attended the University of Minnesota and Purdue University.
Mm-hmm. When you were a youngster going to school, you attended a public school in a town. And was that one classroom for every grade, or was it a multi-grade?
It was two grades to one teacher, to one room.
Uh-huh.
And it was a good experience. I really enjoyed it when I look back. And we had our hometown, it was the days before salary schedules, but they really believed in paying their teachers a little more than the neighboring schools. And they were able to attract better teachers, we always felt, for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just outstanding people.
You didn't have kindergarten in those days,
no,
suppose.
No, not at
you
that time.
You started at first grade.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And did you walk a long ways to school? Or did you?
No, we had buses in those days.
We did have buses.
So we were bused to school. And
Even
in the winter time, the busing was by horse sled. And I don't know if you ever remember the old rural buses.
No.
They were a canvas, looked like a covered wagon, only more square, and had little coal heaters in them, drawn by a team of horses. A lot of fun to ride the runners in back when you were tired of sitting or running alongside.
But you lived in town, but you still were picked
no,
up? No. Oh, you lived out in the country?
We lived 6 miles in a rural area.
Oh, I see.
On
Did
a
your
farm.
Father, your father farmed
right.
Oh, I see. So then you came by bus then. In regardless of the weather, you always took the bus then?
That's right.
Oh, yeah. And did you have a junior high and a senior high school right there in the town, too?
Right. The elementary was 1 through 8 in those days in North Dakota, and the high school was 9 through 12.
Yeah. And you brought a lunch bucket along, I suppose?
Right. Until, I think, about 1939, the hot lunch programs were started, in that area at least. And then you were served one hot dish. Which was usually Spanish rice or whatever, and a beverage, which was usually cocoa or milk. So then you'd bring your own sandwich or whatever.
And you don't have the same kind of stories as people who lived in the real rural areas who had hunched around a potbelly stove and put their baked potatoes on that, and the teacher was the janitor and that sort of thing. Usually when I think of North Dakota schools, that's what I think of, but not in the case where you came from. Much more progressive.
Well, I think it just happens where your home or your farm was or whatever. And there were a lot of rural schools in our area. You know, that were not consolidated yet at that time.
How many were in your graduating class?
Four.
Just four.
Right.
And you, did you keep up with those people so you know?
Yes, we had a reunion not too long ago, and it was for all the classes from the time it was a part of a centennial.
Sure.
From all the classes that had graduated, so it was really quite a large
group. What was this
town again? Grace, Binford. But when I was a small youngster, we moved to Grace City, North Dakota.
Oh, I see.
And I grew up there.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's interesting to hear about. And so you went away to the, you went to the Navy first, I suppose, right
out of
high school?
That's right,
And this, well, the war still was on at this time?
Yes, the war had started, and I remember a neighbor stopping in one day and asked me how old I was, and he said, "You'll never, you know, have to fight in this war." And I ended up being involved in World War II. A lot of people thought it'd end in a year or two, but that was not the case.
Then you graduated from high school and then immediately joined the Navy then?
Right.
I see. And so then you went to school mostly in the Navy.
Right.
And got, your, you should say, some credits towards
additional credits.
Did you get any of those credits at Valley City then?
Well,
was that where the Navy sent you?
That's right, no. I was in a school for medics.
Oh.
And we took a lot of chemistry.
Where was this then?
Farragut, Idaho, in a U.S. Naval Training Center.
Oh, yeah.
And then after, you automatically got some physical education credits if you were in the service, like 2 or 3 quarters, something like that. But I had taken a lot of chemistry and math and kinesiology and other science courses like that. And Valley City was generous in that respect, and they were college-level courses.
Well, I know Valley City had a naval training, had sailors, didn't they?
Yeah, they had a V-12 unit.
V-12,
there.
That's what I meant. Yeah, right. You weren't in V-12, though.
No.
I see. And so then you you were in the Navy, and when you got out, how long were you in the Navy then?
2 years.
The
war ended, as you know, in 1946, and we were one of the last, I was really in the last group that could get out on points. And finally, everyone was released that wanted to get out. But I enlisted for 2 years over the duration of the war.
Right.
So if the war had still been going on, I would still be in the Navy.
And so then you went from there to Grand Fort? No, to Valley City.
That's right. From the Navy, I went to Valley City and completed my bachelor's degree with a major in science.
When you were graduated from Valley City, then did you go into teaching the following fall then?
Yes, I did.
And where was that?
At Gardner, North Dakota.
Oh, not too far from here.
That's right.
And what were you, what did you do there?
Okay, I was a science teacher, and I also was a football and basketball coach and track. And in addition to that, I was a principal.
My goodness.
Of the 9 through 12 classes.
Wow. And how long did you remain there?
I was there 3 years, and then I moved to Minnesota.
And went from Gardner to?
New Fulden, Minnesota, which is in Marshall County, near Thief River Falls. And that's where I started as a full-time principal, nearly.
So you really have gotten went into administration almost right away, didn't
right.
you? You never did just classroom teaching. You went right into administrative.
I had administration with teaching.
I see.
And at Gardner, it really was a full-time teaching job, too, because I had five classes and a study hall. And then the kids there had never had typing. And I really felt bad about that because I had taught taken typing myself and was able to teach typing. So at Christmas time, the youngsters, with permission of the board and the superintendent, rented typewriters from Gaffney's, and some of them bought their own portables to have at home. And we launched into our first course of typing, and we put out a newspaper, school newspaper, and the kids ended up taking almost a full year of typing in that half a year. They were really motivated and wanted the course. And
they probably still are teaching typing from that day forward.
Right. And, and some of those kids have done really well. I'm really proud of them.
You still hear or see
Oh, yes.
some of those people from Gardner then?
Right.
At that, during
they have moved
years.
Away, sure. Most of them, but uh-huh. We see them at class reunions that you're invited back to and mm-hmm. so on.
As you think back now upon your career in the administration, why did you decide to go into administration?
Well, I always wanted to be a teacher, and initially having taking a lot of medics courses in the Navy, I was interested in medicine primarily, but yet I was always interested in teaching with that. And my thought was to go into medicine, but into the teaching, mm-hmm. you know, end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I majored in science and took all the science courses that I could at Valley City. And then I decided, as I neared the end of my college career, to mm-hmm. enter teaching right away and then mm-hmm. go after the master's degree, mm-hmm. you know, while teaching or summer sessions or whatever.
Had you thought about teaching before you went into the Navy?
Yes.
You always thought that teaching would be a career for you?
That was my leaning. That, uh-huh. you know,
did you have anyone that in your life that influenced you, do you think? Any person?
I think
that
so. I had a fifth grade teacher that was just outstanding, and I just, you know, learned so much from her.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that she'd have to be my impact teacher if you think of all the people mm-hmm. you had in college and mm-hmm. high school and elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just a lot like some teachers we've had in Moorhead.
Mm-hmm.
And Lynn Keating, the one I'd mm-hmm. think of. And
mm-hmm.
maybe Lynn Prom, if I had her as a teacher in my building more.
Oh, that's nice.
But she was great. And that inspired me, I think.
Uh-huh. Can you remember the very first day of teaching?
Yes, I can.
What was that like?
Well, it was a real challenge, and I know we moved there early in August and spent a lot of time at school.
You were married at this time?
Right. My wife and I both taught in that school. And she was teaching first and second grade. And I can remember spending a lot of time in preparing for this new venture. And we had all our texts and things we needed and getting the lesson plans ready and, mm-hmm. you know, projecting the objectives for the year. And it was just, you know, you could see you were going to have a very busy schedule handling the discipline and the attendance as well as, you know, teaching a full load.
And coaching.
And coaching besides.
Mm-hmm.
So you just felt that you needed to be fully ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always felt that school should open in the fall as though you had just closed school for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I picked that up from a college professor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really been my own personal goal.
Mm-hmm. You were saying that you got, you know, you knew you had to be ready because it was going to be a very full schedule.
Right.
Do you feel then that even way back then, teaching was as busy a occupation and a career as it is today?
I think
so. Or maybe even busier then? Or?
Well, I think we had more preparations in our case than I had later on when I had mm-hmm. like two classes of science at New Folden and the rest was administration,
mm-hmm.
Chemistry and physics. And I think then it was not as much preparation, although the sciences do take a lot of preparation.
Right.
And you want to stay current and so
mm-hmm.
on. But I don't think it has changed that much.
Mm-hmm.
And you really wanted to do your best job for the youngsters, so you spend a lot of evenings working,
mm-hmm.
most every evening.
Do you think children have changed from the time that you first?
Not really, basically. A lot of people think they're more intelligent today. You hear that expression.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they are in a sense that they relate to a wider area geographically.
Mm-hmm.
And then television has broadened their horizon as well.
Right.
And yet, I see a lot of similarities to the kids that you first had in school. But their frame of reference keeps mm-hmm. changing, and ours does too, and society is changing
mm-hmm.
every year.
We seem to hear that children have a lot more problems today than they did years ago. Do you think that's true?
Well, I think they have different kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
They're faced more with families that split up.
Mm-hmm.
That's more frequent. And I think they're faced more with a situation of things that will interest them outside of school.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot more out there for them, I suppose.
And I'm thinking of drugs and other kinds
peer
of chemical dependency.
Yeah.
Peer pressure was always there. Mm-hmm. And I think drinking was always there. Mm-hmm. But more of the marijuana and other kinds of drugs mm-hmm. that we didn't even think about back in those days, but talked about them in the Navy.
Yeah. Someone made a statement to me the other day about that and said that years ago when you and I first started teaching, mm-hmm. The students were so busy doing their schoolwork, plus when they went home, they always had chores to do. There was always work to do. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, the students don't have that. The work that they have is divorced from the home. It's something separate, at least the high school kids.
They'll take a part-time job.
Yeah, they'll take a part-time job. Yeah. But years ago, the students were needed at home. And
true.
This sort of, the fact that the parents needed the student mm-hmm. help them to become, much better mm-hmm. student and a better adult and had a sense of responsibility and that sort of thing. Do you think that's true? That
I think it is to a certain extent, and I think it depended and still does depend on the family.
Yeah.
And there still are a lot of families that have chores, so to speak, for their children.
Mm-hmm.
There are jobs around the house that they have to do or mm-hmm. take care of the lawn or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they'll keep that structure so the kids have a work ethic, then and feel a part of the family, that they're contributing
mm-hmm.
to the well-being of the family and to the comfort of the home.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is still there, but you're right, there are not as many opportunities as we had to really be helpful.
Yeah. You talked about being very busy now at your first school, mm-hmm. getting ready for school and so on. Did you get involved at all in the community in Grafton? No, not Grafton, Gardner?
Right. Yes, we did. They had a community club, and we were active in that. And
What kind of a club was that?
A community club is, they meet once a month on a Friday evening, and they will have maybe some speaker in or something like that. They'll have a business meeting and report on their funds
mm-hmm.
and what took place at the last meeting.
Mm-hmm. Well, men and women came
men
to
Men and women and
oh.
children.
Oh, is that right?
The family.
Wow.
And then it would be followed with a dance. They'd have an orchestra.
Oh, yeah.
So you dance with all of the people that you met and mothers of your students. And
it was a kind of a close-knit community then, wouldn't it
really
be, with that type of activity going? Interdenominational, as far as church is concerned, everybody came.
Right,
No
matter.
Yeah.
They were school people, non-school people, and your students were there. And, it was a nice cross-section.
Then you lived right in Gardner then?
Yes, we did.
And then you moved to New Fulden and stayed there how long?
We were there 3 years in New Fulden.
Oh, And then from there you came here?
Then we came back to this area, to Hawley, as a principal. And I was a full-time principal there. And then after my first year, our superintendent moved to a different school and in southern Minnesota. And I was asked by the board to become the superintendent. So I was the superintendent at Hawley for the balance of time that we were there.
I see. Evidently, that you like to be closer contact with students, so you ended up going back to being a principal.
I really did miss it, and I enjoyed working with the parents, the school board members. But it was entirely different. You worried so much about the tax levy, the
mm-hmm.
budgets.
Right.
And people now think that it was easier to raise funds for schools. But there was no different then than it is now, really.
Is that right?
It was a tough task.
Uh-huh.
And no one wants to pay taxes.
Right.
But they all want the services.
Sure. Uh-huh.
So you have that happy balance to
mm-hmm.
negotiate. But I think Minnesota has been a good educational climate, and I think, mm-hmm. like in Hawley, too, they really did support the schools,
mm-hmm.
With bond issues when we needed
it. Makes it a lot easier for an administrator or a teacher, too, doesn't it?
But you always worried about that tax money, that
sure.
you have to raise the levy.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's not as educational a job as a principalship.
No, it's more of a management
right.
position than business mm-hmm. management than anything else. So then you came to Moorhead after Hawley then?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
I've got a long history.
Yet.
We're not,
I guess so.
We're
this
not
is
quite
wonderful.
Here.
Okay.
And we're not even up to the 60s yet.
Okay.
But I decided to go into business for a couple of years. And we moved to Mankato. And I had an insurance agency there. And it was really a good experience. What I really liked about it was the income was greater than teaching and mm-hmm. administration. However, you could go to PTA meetings. Our son then started school in Mankato. And you could just sense what the teachers and the principal was thinking, you know, and they would face the parents and answer questions or put on programs and whatever. Mm-hmm. So I did get out of my ivory tower, and it took me, well, I was in business for 2 years. And less than that, I knew I still wanted to be back into education.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I was looking at principalship or superintendency, mm-hmm. but I leaned to the secondary principalship. And I was interviewed at the same time for two positions. One was at Aiken High School,
mm-hmm.
Aiken County,
Northern
county
Minnesota,
seat,
yeah. mm-hmm.
right down by Brainerd.
Yeah.
Or another school in southern Minnesota, Atwater, for superintendency. And this was early spring, late winter. And I had the interview at Atwater for the superintendency on a Sunday, and our families were there. There were five candidates there. And then the interview at Aiken was on the following Tuesday evening. And while I was in Aiken for the interview, and that was settled, there were two candidates there, I was offered the job, and I accepted. You know, we liked everything we saw.
Mm-hmm.
And when we returned home the next day, there was a call from the chairman of the board in Atwater offering me the superintendency. So timing there was very crucial.
Well, I guess so.
So that's how things happened. And from Aiken, then in 1962, I came to Moorhead as the principal at South Junior High.
I see. Well, when you, in 1962?
1962.
That must
Moorhead.
Have been the year that school was, no. When was that school built at South
Well, it opened 57, 58.
57, okay. So who was the principal there before you?
Tom Kloster.
Oh, yes.
Senior.
That's right.
And I replaced him.
I see.
He became ill and was going to retire, and mm-hmm. he passed away right before school was out.
Oh, yeah. So you started in the fall of 62 then.
Right, in the summer, really,
uh-huh.
in July.
Yeah, right, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And you were at South Junior then for?
19 years.
19 years. Right. Imagine that. Boy, those years went fast, huh?
They did. Uh-huh. And we enjoyed having your children there.
That's right, all three. And then you went from South Junior over to the Senior High.
So what had happened, we had closed Central Junior High, and Mr. Braniff had gone to North.
That's right.
And then North was closed and 4 years ago. And he had come to Moorhead as a teacher and had more tenure than I did. And that's...
Basically the reason
basically
why
the reason the superintendent gave, that reason.
I see.
And so then I went with the ninth graders from all of the Moorhead junior highs.
I see.
To the senior high. And I was there for 4 years until last summer, and then this fall up at the North Middle School.
Mm-hmm. Well, for 19 years, things pretty much went on in a normal way. And then our school district kind of went through some turmoil there. We're closing the schools and moving and transferring and all that sort of thing. So you lived through all those.
Yes, and those were difficult years.
They were difficult years, right?
Seeing the younger people on your staff being cut or put on unrequested leave.
Right.
It was very traumatic.
Right. Howard, during the time that you were principal at South Junior, that you had a unique situation there for a while. Modular scheduling or something. Mm-hmm. Describe what that was, that modular
There was a sort of a surge in educational circles to change your time sequences.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of meetings around the state and around the nation and mm-hmm. and schools that were looking at moving to modules of time instead of straight class periods.
Mm-hmm.
And our staff was interested in that. We spent about 2 years studying different programs, including some down in the Twin Cities, Moorhead State University Campus School.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, we made a decision. We'd like to make a proposal to the board that we move towards a flexible modular schedule. And we proposed that to the board, and first to the administration. And they went along with that. They, you know, were challenged by it.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And it was very interesting, and I think the teachers really made it work, and it was a challenge to the students.
How did that work?
Well, it meant a different kind of structure in that you had small group, And then your so-called average size groups and your large group instruction. Mm-hmm. And then independent study instead of the study halls. And large group instruction would save the teacher's time. Mm-hmm. If you had five classes of general science, let's say in ninth grade, excuse me, you could bring them all together in the cafetorium.
I see. Yeah.
And one day a week.
You give them one lecture then. Yeah, just one lecture instead of five.
Or if you had some slides or films or whatever.
It makes good sense.
Oh, it was really saving teacher time.
Right.
It was just
why was it discontinued?
Well, there was more, it was costing a little more money.
Oh, it was.
Because you need a little bit bigger staff. Mm-hmm. And we had a change in the central administration.
I imagine it was quite a challenge to even schedule it, though, wouldn't it be? It would be really difficult to schedule.
It was tough, but we were really fortunate in that we were associated with Stanford University.
Oh.
And they had a computerized scheduling system.
Oh.
And they did our scheduling for us.
I see.
We had to make adjustments in it.
How many years did you have modular scheduling then?
For about 5 years.
It was 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then with the change of the administration then, the modular scheduling went out the window, so to speak, at that time?
Well, I think the new administration looked at it a little differently because they'd not been here. And times were changing, too.
Right.
People were looking with a jaundiced eye at the extra money that it was costing. Mm-hmm. You had some special
of course, our school district was in a real financial bind about that
time.
It
was starting to get really tight.
Mm-hmm.
And we could see, too, where we could save some money.
Mm-hmm.
And because we had some aides that we hadn't had before.
Right.
And the pupil-teacher ratio was a little less.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some team teaching going on, a lot of good things.
Mm-hmm.
And so we gradually worked back into double mods, we called them, which was getting closer to a regular class period.
Mm-hmm.
And gradually did away with a large group and small group instruction. The small group instruction was just tremendous, too.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually just worked out of it financially.
Is there anything else? I'm sure you were proud of that modular scheduling setup. I'm sure that was something that other people came from other districts to look at.
They did. We had a lot
model.
Of visitors from all
did.
Over Minnesota, North Dakota, Winnipeg, places in Canada. And they were always, very impressed.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, several kinds of principals in action and staffs in the nation. Some are always looking and just looking and picking up, little ideas. Some are brave enough to make a big change, and that's what happened to us.
Yes.
But if the entire faculty had not been for it, I don't think it would work.
No.
So I think you really, any kind of program, like the STEP program when that was initiated, you really have to have people supporting it, too.
That's right.
Keep an open mind.
Yeah, it's a process of growing, from... Sometimes a lot of negativism to at least let's see what it's all about and then gradually get the support. along with, or besides this modular scheduling, can you think of anything else that the junior high there had? You had good staff, I know, anything else that you're particularly proud of those years?
I think so. We initiated a reading program and we called it English Reading. Language arts for students that are still having difficulty with reading.
Do they still have that?
And they still do have it. And Mrs. Tabor is still the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And Christy Munson had worked a little bit with it when she was there, and then she went to the high school and initiated their first reading program.
Right, and they still have it.
And they still
the
have
school.
A variation of that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they've made, minor changes, and yet it's a chance to continue helping kids that need additional instruction in reading to become better readers.
We talked a little bit about how things have changed as far as the schools were concerned from the time you first started till today.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the changes have been probably in administration and the involvement of school boards or anything. Can you comment on that? Do you think it's for the better that the boards are as active as they are and we have advisory boards and all the parents and all that? What's your perception?
Comment positively about that. I think that Dr. Trokel, our superintendent here in Moorhead, has initiated an Adopt-a-School program.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that because a board member becomes more familiar with your school,
mm-hmm.
and his children may not necessarily be attending that
That's
particular
true.
School. But you still have your administrative channels, but it does help a lot to get to know a board member better.
Mm-hmm. You don't think then that the board is taking over duties that principals should be taking over?
No, I think they're very careful about that.
Yeah.
And yet you can feel free to call them and know, use them as a sounding board and whatever.
Mm-hmm. I think probably years ago, it was more like it was a team, you know, the school board and the administration, the teachers were a team. Mm-hmm. And we got away from that for a while. I think it's maybe, do you think, agree with me? I think it's coming back to more of
I
a team
so.
Approach rather than which for a while we went through, I think, here.
And even inviting principals to school board meetings.
Yeah.
And at one time, we would only go if we had something to offer. You know,
you had to speak up or
request,
do something.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, now they want you there, too.
Uh-huh.
And, well, I think they involve, you know, the whole community.
Everyone,
coming.
Right.
Right. And they have quite an audience sometimes, don't
Department
they?
Department chairman and everyone else.
Uh-huh. And you continue your schooling through all this.
Yes.
And when did you do all this extra schooling? In the summer, then, or
well,
night
yes.
classes?
Well, yes. And
or?
Then the University of North Minnesota... he has a person in their education department administration who's a former principal on the range area,
mm-hmm.
Neil Nickerson. He's made quite a name for himself. He's a Columbia graduate with a doctorate. And he has put on various courses for school administrators. Sometimes they'll be on campus or they might be in Alexandria at the Holiday Inn.
Oh, I see.
And it might be successive weekends for X number of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Never during the school day.
No, uh-huh.
And those have been good sessions.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then you got your master's at the University of Minnesota, did you?
University of North Dakota.
University of North Dakota, mm-hmm. Up in Grand Forks.
Right.
Then you took time off then to go up there, and or summers or
summers
whatever.
And mm-hmm. Saturday classes.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. Yeah. when you are, as you've been an administrator in the public schools here in the junior high, I'm sure you were, mostly involved in youth things.
Right.
Were you involved in any other community activities in the city of Moorhead here?
Yeah, both my wife and I have been Sunday school teachers for many years, and we just retired a few years ago from that particular job. And then I've been involved with the city in serving on the planning commission, the zoning committee, and also the board of adjustments.
Mm-hmm. When did you start all this, the board of adjustments and the...
That was about 6 years ago.
Uh-huh. The planning too?
And planning commission. You can only stay on for about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
During
the time you were on the planning committee, what some things happened then? Can you recall?
Well, I think starting with the most recent things, I have to pardon me, I've developed a cough, is Eventide's expansion. Which was very controversial in the neighborhood because it means removing some houses and so on. So we were very careful in having the hearings and having neighbors in and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that finally was passed because they had a choice of moving out of there to a different part of town, which had been very expensive, and they had a very nice facility there to add on to.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fargo Clinic on A Street.
Right.
And... any kinds of construction, any kinds of new business come before the Planning Commission or any new developments.
Mm-hmm.
And developers will bring in suggestions for developing a new area of town. Village Green was developed during that time.
That's been an interesting committee to be on, I would
really?
Think. Uh-huh.
And I really have enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
You meet a lot of interesting people, and yet you feel you served your city too.
Sure. What professional organizations have you belonged to, Howard, or
yes.
do you belong to?
I belong to Phi Delta Kappa, and started in graduate school, which is an honorary education fraternity.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that I've been president of our local chapter, too, here, and served as an officer for many years. And in addition to that, I've been active in our Principals Association, serving as secretary and
when you say
president.
Principals organization, are you talking about local, regional?
Yeah, local, and then the Western Division, we call it, which is regional, having served as an officer in those areas. And most recently, on the state level, I've served as president of our state organization, which is which I am now currently holding that position.
You are. When did you become president?
Actually, January 1st, 1986.
I see.
This year.
I see. So you're the current president of the State Principals Association?
Secondary Principals Association.
Wow, that's the Secondary Principals, I see.
State it's president. A real honor.
I
really
I
feel,
say it is.
You know, to be elected by your peer group.
Yes.
A certain amount of politics involved, but by the same token, it's
you
really
it's an honor.
A great organization.
Mm-hmm. How many members?
We have approximately 850 members, so it's one of the larger organizations that you might belong to on a state level.
Yes. And how long, for how long is your tenure then?
It'll end on December 30th of this year, so it's a one-year term.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, that's something you can be proud of, I'm sure.
I should mention, too, that I serve on a national committee of school and college relations.
Well, what does that do?
And we have a region made up of several states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, North and South Dakota, and Wyoming.
Mm.
And we're in Region 4, and we have one person from the region serving on a committee for the nation, for the national organization.
Oh, I see.
So I'm their representative.
Wow. And where do you meet then? Or do you meet once a year then? Or?
Well, we've had some interesting sessions. We meet in the region, we'll meet once a year. And then the school-college relations committee will meet in Washington, D.C. once a year, and then also at the national convention once a year.
So what is the purpose of this organization?
Well, we're looking at the relationship on this committee, our college people, senior high people, and as well as middle-level people, mm-hmm. secondary people. And I represent the middle-level area. And the purpose is to cause better articulation between the secondary schools, whatever level, middle level mm-hmm. to the senior high level, and from there to the college
mm-hmm.
and universities.
I see.
We're concerned about SAT scores and the tests themselves, and we're a sounding board for that organization.
Anything to do with making the colleges sometimes complain that the high school students aren't prepared enough, and the high school teachers complain that their students coming from the junior high aren't prepared. It's part of that.
Yeah, looking at the curriculum.
I see. Oh.
So it's really a challenge, and I've enjoyed it. It's really some top-notch people in the nation on the committee.
Right.
Outstanding university people.
And did you just get this position now recently?
Right.
And that you'll be on that for?
3 years.
3 year period. Mm-hmm. I see. Well, that's exciting.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Well, Howard, would you go into teaching if you had to do it all over again?
I certainly would.
No hesitation.
No hesitation.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
How would you meet such nice people, students and adults? And.
Mm-hmm. You've been very satisfied in your career then.
I really have.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there have been down times too, like everybody, but for the most part, you're a contented man.
Really, and I feel very positive about working with the young people. And
mm-hmm. and the question that I was going to ask next, I guess you've already answered really, and that is, would you encourage others to go into teaching? Well, obviously, you must have encouraged your son.
Right.
And since he is now a principal.
Yes.
At East Grand Forks. Is
an elementary school, River Heights.
I see. Uh-huh. Well, you must be very proud of that.
We are, and it's and he's enjoying it, and I think. I think he's trying to satisfy his mother and his father. I'm a secondary person. His mother's an elementary person.
But you're
an
administrator.
He's an administrator like I am, but yet he's elementary.
So well, what could be better than that?
A real politician.
Right. Uh-huh. We talked a little bit before about the changes in the children and what little I think you mentioned that you didn't see. Basically, kids are the same.
Mm-hmm.
However, there have been some changes, I think, that maybe aren't as deep as some people would believe. For example, in the area of discipline, do you see some, over the years, as you looked back, children have behaved differently, and they do today mm-hmm. than they did years ago. Do you see a swing in a pendulum or anything when it comes to discipline?
I think that's happened probably twice or so, that, after the war, there were kind of high times and money was flush after World
mm-hmm.
War II, I'm saying.
Not enough to buy, more money than things to buy.
And then the early 50s, things were a little tight again,
uh-huh.
in the late 40s, as you remember. And there was a dip in our economy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was more seriousness, perhaps, and so on. Not on the part of everyone, but mm-hmm. in general. So I think you do see, as you say, the pendulum swinging back and forth.
Mm-hmm. In the 70s, the restless kids and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the difference in the change of attitude about
right.
Schooling. What would you say the children's attitude today or the students' attitude today is about education?
I think about 2 years ago it started swinging back again, a little more seriousness about taking the really tough courses.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed at the high school while I was there and advising kids too, that more and more of them were taking the sciences and the math.
Mm-hmm.
And that was heartening to see.
Mm-hmm.
And opting not to take, you know, the so-called easier courses, whatever they may mean.
Mm-hmm.
But making certain, we had a lot of kids who were starting to take 6 credits. And even a few that would petition for 7,
right.
starting at 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 classes is nothing for a student that's motivated and has,
mm-hmm.
you know, above average ability
mm-hmm.
and so on and better. And being more serious about preparing himself, herself, to have a smattering of courses
mm-hmm.
for a good background
mm-hmm.
so they could make a solid decision when
they're looking more toward their future,
yeah.
planning more than
right.
they used to do. That's
so
encouraging, isn't it?
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And the increase in students in chemistry and physics and higher math really
right.
mushroomed out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it had something to do with your STEP program too, we'll have to admit that, because you became more involved
mm-hmm.
the last 3 years, I think, at the senior high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to think that's
years.
Made a difference.
It has.
Mm-hmm.
It really has. And it takes people like that because there has to be expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And the higher expectations we have as administrators and teachers and you and your program, the greater things that you'll get back from the students.
Right, I believe that too.
More involvement.
Mm-hmm. What about dress codes? Have you lived through different dress codes and problems with that? Do you remember?
I really am, and I've always felt that if you come to school and you're respectable looking, it's not going to cause a disturbance or a distraction, and your parents are proud of you when you left.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the kind of dress you should have.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, sometimes you have to put in a code. And the Civil Liberties Union caused schools to back off a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really ashamed to say I remember some principals that had, when the short skirts were
mm-hmm.
becoming fashionable, they had the gals kneel to see if the dresses touch the floor.
Mm-hmm,
you know, that's humiliating.
Uh-huh.
I never got into that kind of situation.
No. Uh-huh.
You respected the person, and if there was a violation, you just talked very privately to
mm-hmm.
that person and
not to make it and not make an issue of it.
Right.
It seems to
respect their integrity. Right. And
I don't think we've had too big a problem with that in this
no,
area, have we?
No.
What about the drug problem, though?
I think, as we said earlier, that's another facet in our society that
mm-hmm.
has developed that the two of us were not involved in as children.
Do you see that in junior high now, a drug
you
problem
see,
in the junior high?
You see it happening more in the middle level than you did at one time, and I think it's more, though, with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And because you get into certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the marijuana and the other kinds of drugs and pills and so
mm-hmm.
on then will get is more involved in the senior high. More kids at that
mm-hmm.
age involved.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's turning around too. I
mm-hmm.
think kids are looking at that entirely differently
mm-hmm.
and are using better judgment
mm-hmm.
and not experimenting.
Mm-hmm.
The organization for Mothers Against Drunk Drivers
mm-hmm.
and the youth groups involved.
Right.
And then Moorhead, the youth intervention program with
right.
Jim Tholm at the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And the counselors,
student counselors, as student,
right.
aren't they? Don't they have students
they
helping
have a TAC,
students?
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Teenage health counselor
yeah,
at the
right.
senior high,
mm-hmm.
and in the middle level schools too. Really,
mm-hmm. do you see any problem with that? Now you're presently serving as principal of a middle school. It's actually
mm-hmm.
a sixth grade
right.
School. Do you see any drug problems in that with those students?
We have not had anything surface to my attention
mm-hmm.
to this point this year,
mm-hmm.
other than the parents having the problem,
right.
and the student is naturally a part of that, and
sure.
he needs to be part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. As a principal of the sixth grade, do you see a lot of difference between teaching being a principal of a middle school's grade 6 than a middle school grade 7, 8, 9?
Well, there aren't as many students as we're accustomed to having, you know,
mm-hmm.
but I'm also involved with the Clay County Vocational Center.
That's right.
As the assistant director, because they happen to be housed in our building.
Right.
And that's working out real well so that then I have the opportunity to stay in the building the mm-hmm. full day and not go back to the right. senior high or go back to one of the other buildings, mm-hmm. whatever the case may be. But I think going back to your original question, I just don't see the drug problem with the sixth graders. And I can see they're very close in age to the seventh graders.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think there's that great a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And in our building, we happen to have some departmentalizing
right.
going on. We have a 4-member team that will switch the courses around,
mm-hmm.
you know, the science
mm-hmm.
and math and the English and social mm-hmm. studies. So that's really preparing those
for
students
what's coming.
For the next level.
Mm-hmm. It's turned out to be a pretty good solution to a space problem, wasn't it? Don't
it
you
really,
think?
It really has, and
I
I'm really proud of the kids and the staff. I think
uh-huh.
they've really made it work, and
right.
I'm sure that it's something that you don't enter into, and it's not been tried very often in the United States. And I only know of one other school, and I don't know the exact location, but I've asked the national office, I've written to them to give me more information on
uh-huh.
that. But the kids seem to be buoying up the teachers, and the teachers are
right.
reflecting that, and they're buoyed up too.
Mm-hmm. It makes it a little bit more of a homey atmosphere when there aren't so many students, I
mm-hmm.
think, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
And in Moorhead's situation, it's a building that's identical to
right.
the 7th and 8th grade building, and we had our 5th grade orientation last night.
Mm-hmm.
We had a very good turnout of, uh-huh. of parents and 5th graders
oh, uh-huh.
Preparing for next year.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell they were concerned about the building and
mm-hmm.
you know, getting to know
sure.
the classrooms. That'll not be a problem
no.
next year for
no.
our current sixth graders.
Right.
And by the same token, they'll be acquainted with the floor plan because
right.
the south campus
exactly
is
the
exactly
same.
The same.
Mm-hmm. Have you always, the length of the school year has always pretty much been the same all these years? You didn't have in North Dakota, did you have a shorter year? Do you remember?
In North Dakota was very much the same as Minnesota
oh.
when I moved to Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And Minnesota gradually increased from 172 days to 180 days, we say.
Yeah.
And actual teaching days, 178 in Moorhead.
Yeah. What would you think about going to, they're talking now in the looking toward the future to having school all year round and having 9 weeks on and 3 weeks off and 9 weeks on and so on. What would you think about that?
I would want to examine that, and I've really been a proponent of it for many years. I think we're not using our buildings as completely as we should.
Mm-hmm.
And parents are very mobile now. They're able to travel
right.
a lot, and maybe they wouldn't mind taking their vacations at different times of the year.
I understand that the attendance is higher when they have school year-round.
I've
better
heard
attendance.
That.
Uh-huh.
I've heard that. And some of the kids are inclined to need something to keep busy in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Might want to be involved. In
right.
And even get involved in an accelerated program.
Well, talking to people whose children go to schools like that, it seems like most of them are definitely in favor of that
mm-hmm.
sort of thing. It's another thing that might happen here in Moorhead. Who knows? You know,
who knows?
They're looking. They're studying it. I know.
Money-wise, it would save.
I guess it is financially, economically feasible. Huh?
Right.
Uh huh. And I guess we never do in Moorhead our reason has to be if it's good for kids,
right.
and not because it's economically
right.
feasible. But if it's good for kids, we might mm-hmm. try it, isn't that right?
And we do have a summer school again.
That's right, and that's good to see.
And that is approaching nearly a year-round school.
Right.
Because it does extend
they
it for
get,
some
And they get
children.
Quite a large population of our students go,
mm-hmm.
too, don't they?
They really do.
Right. Mm-hmm. What would you like to see happen in education now, Howard, in the next decade?
Well, I'd like to see that the pupil-teacher ratio not increase. Because I think when that happens, I know there are studies that have shown that the learning doesn't change that much. But, and I must admit, when I was teaching, like at New Folden, along with the administrative job that I had,
mm-hmm.
that I had 53 kids in ninth grade science. And you had it very structured. And kids were working in groups of 3 and 4 on experiments instead of singly. You know, that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
which was not as great as
no.
being able to perform your own experiment. So I'd like to see that not change. Mm-hmm. And because the control factor has an influence on that situation. Right. So it depends on how strong that teacher is. If they're not as strong in control, and they might be a great teacher, very scholarly, whatever,
right.
It'll affect the learning in that class.
What I've often thought is, so it doesn't affect how much, maybe the class size doesn't affect the amount they've learned, mm-hmm. but I wonder if it affects their attitude about learning. I don't know if they could measure that, but I would venture to say that it does.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's as important as what they've learned. Do they want to learn more? Do they mm-hmm. want to go on?
And you must admit that we had a higher dropout rate at the time that we had higher, larger sizes.
That's right.
Classes.
So that must make a difference.
Could be a factor.
Mm-hmm. Anything else in changes that you'd like to see happen?
Well, I think that I would like to see schools like Morehead continue their updating of equipment. We're into computers a lot now, and we really do believe in technology.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to maintain that. It's so easy to slip behind.
Mm-hmm.
At last night's cabinet meeting, we were wondering if we made a mistake in going with a certain kind of computer. That was a big decision. Which way do you go?
Right.
And certain companies have lagged back to see what other companies were experimenting with.
Right.
And now the real solid companies are coming forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to mention one by name, but mm-hmm. it's very obvious when you look at mm-hmm. what is happening. So I think you need to get into technology, mm-hmm. but you need at the same time to make a sound decision
mm-hmm.
On the type of equipment that you do buy. It's mm-hmm. very expensive.
All in all, though, you seem pretty proud of having been a principal here in the Morehead Schools.
You bet.
And you seem proud of our educational system in the Morehead Schools.
I think, and I've seen a lot of schools in the country, and I've visited schools in Europe mm-hmm. and in England more so, and we are not second to any.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
just
nice
recently, a week ago, last Sunday, the Minneapolis Tribune published SAT scores.
Mm-hmm.
And Minnesota, it was all of Minnesota. They're not to be used for that purpose, and I was surprised to see it come out that way. But Morehead was ranked, the students who have taken the test,
right.
Was ranked in the top 95th percentile.
Wow.
That tells you something.
It really does.
That there are some dedicated teachers that are working with those kids, and they have the equipment to do it and the resources to work with them. But the end product and the input tool that there are kids out there in this community that want a good education mm-hmm. and are willing to, you know, to work for it and end up with really great scores.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't get the scores
impressive.
By staying in bed or
whatever. No, that's for sure. That's for sure.
It is impressive, and we should be very proud of it, and
you
I am.
Bet.
I really am.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a credit to the kindergarten teachers and all the way up through the whole system, mm-hmm. not just the senior high people. To the STEP program, too. A lot of those kids are ones that have come through that.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking forward to retirement?
Well, I really am, but I'm not ready for it
mm-hmm.
In that sense. And I think of Helene Kading, if we can say this mm-hmm. on a recording, who was an outstanding Latin teacher at South Junior High for many years and did also teach at the senior high in later years.
Right.
In addition to the classes at South. And she was never any different in her motivation. It was always high motivation right up to her very last day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what every person should do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I hope I can do.
Right.
So.
Well, thank you very much, Harder. Is there any other question that I didn't ask you that you would like to have had me ask?
Well, I think you said earlier, can you remember any moving incidents?
Yes, I'd like you
I
to share that.
Two.
Okay, I'd like you to share those.
And I was visiting with a nephew in Pasco, Washington, several years ago, and he was nearing his senior year, and he was taking a lot of math and chemistry, physics, mm-hmm. and French. And he was wondering, he was asking me what he should do, you know, and you're very careful, you don't say you should do this or that.
Right.
And I said, have you considered teaching? And he said, yes, I have, but I have one real worry, Uncle Howard, and that is that I would, his words, foul someone up. So what do you mean? Well, he said, if I had a class of kids in physics and if I really didn't do a great job, if I were not the greatest teacher for them or, you know, in the school and whatever, he said, I would really set those kids back. I said, you're the kind of person who should be a teacher.
You bet, absolutely.
But he ended up in computer science and worked at the University of Alaska in setting up their computer program, and he has done a really good job. The other was, we have handicapped people in our schools, and we never had special classes for them. And I remember when I was at New Fulton, we had a girl that was on crutches. She had a leg removed because it was cancerous. And we had a school party, and we were very careful about our gym floors in those days as we are today. You couldn't come into the gym for the party if you had the kinds of shoes that would, you know, scratch the floor. Mm-hmm. It was just for the kids, you know, party for the kids in the evening.
Right.
And she came up and she wheeled up to me on her crutches, and I was standing by the door, and I don't know how she did it, but she showed me the bottom of her shoe. She just flipped her foot up somehow. Mm-hmm. And she says, could I go in with this kind of shoe? And no problem.
So, bless her heart.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, Howard, you've been described to me by other people as being a gracious principal, and I have to agree with a gracious person. And I have to agree with that, since you are now my principal this year. I appreciate this interview very much. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.